Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Dentist nominated for Texas New Dentist of the Year Award. Stephen W. Boyles, DDS of Midland, has been nominated by the West Texas Academy of General Dentistry for the Texas Academy of General Dentistry's Texas New Dentist of the Year Award. This award is considered the most prestigious honor a Texas new dentist can earn. Boyles is one of only 12 dentists nominated for this year's award. He and the other nominees will be honored at the Texas Academy Awards September 16th. Each nominee will be recognized and will receive an engraved plaque. The Texas Academy Awards will conclude with the announcement of the 2022 Texas New Dentist of the Year. The New Dentist of the Year Award is perhaps the best way we can honor and recognize these young and enthusiastic dentists who hold the future of our profession in their hands, Texas AGD President Brooke Elmore said in a news release. Boyles received his Doctor of Dental Science degree from Texas A&M Baylor College of Dentistry in 2016. He distinguished himself professionally by pursuing the AGD Fellowship Award and earned his fellowship in 2020. Boyles is an active member in numerous states and national dental organizations. Sir Francis Bacon once said, "Knowledge is power. We have the knowledge of current issues facing our profession. Therefore, we have the power to make useful changes to better our profession," Boyles said in the release. In addition to his dedication to organized dentistry, Boyles is a member of Grace Lutheran Church. The Texas Academy of General Dentistry's mission is to help general dentists succeed. It is the only association that exclusively represents the needs and interests of general dentists who are the primary care providers for patients of all ages and are responsible for the diagnosis, treatment, management, and overall coordination of services related to patients' oral health needs. Its nearly 3,000 members partner together to help guide the journey of fellowship, mastership, and lifelong learning in order to provide quality dental care in general practice. For more information about the Texas Academy of General Dentistry, visit www.tagd.org. Program benefits West Texas landowners. The Borderlands Research Institute and the Texas Agricultural Land Trust are joining forces with the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service to implement landscape-scale conservation initiatives across the Trans-Pecos region in West Texas. The effort is fueled by a $3.5 million commitment from the NRCS Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which will help fund innovative conservation approaches on private lands, including habitat restoration efforts, conservation easements, and ecosystem services. This will be a game changer for conservation efforts in West Texas. Dr. Lewis Haverson, the Dan Allen Hughes Jr., BRI Endowment Director and Professor of Wildlife Management at Sol Ross State University, said in a news release, "Through this collaboration with the Texas Agricultural Land Trust and by partnering with private landowners, we'll be able to implement a variety of conservation initiatives to address some of the most critical natural resource priorities in the Trans-Pecos, including grassland and riparian habitat restoration and enhancement. BRI is a vital hub of natural resource research and management in the Trans-Pecos region and is the lead organization for this effort. BRI will be responsible for implementing restoration and enhancement projects as well as monitoring and evaluating projects. TALT will provide the expertise for all conservation easement agreements, as well as evaluation of ecosystem services and assessing ecosystem services compensation options. Conservation easements are one of the most effective tools for long-term protection of agricultural working lands, which support a vast diversity of native plants and animals, TALT CEO Chad Ellis said in the release. These funds will help remove the financial barriers to applying conservation easements on private lands, allowing land stewards in the Trans-Pecos region to conserve thousands of acres of working lands in Texas for generations to come. We look forward to helping interested landowners access these tools, and we will also be a resource as they explore ecosystem services marketplaces. A conservation easement is a voluntary legal agreement that allows landowners to retain title and management of their property while forever protecting the land from development. Ecosystem services markets are the most innovative voluntary framework to advance conservation. TALT supports these markets by connecting buyers, sellers, verifiers, and marketplaces with tools and resources that can help accelerate the adoption of ecosystem services markets. With more than 95% of land in Texas privately held, private landowners are instrumental to successful conservation efforts, which benefit us all through healthy wildlife populations and cleaner air and water. NRCS's Regional Conservation Partnership Program, RCPP, funding provides opportunities for conservation partners to collaborate one-on-one with farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners throughout the nation to implement systems that conserve water and soil resources, improve the health of wildlife habitats, and increase climate resilience. RCPP partners offer value-added contributions to amplify the impact of RCPP funding. To date, RCPP has leveraged partner contributions of more than $1 for every $1 invested by USDA, resulting in nearly $3 billion collectively invested in natural resource conservation on the nation's private lands. The Regional Conservation Partnership Program is a public-private partnership working at its best. Terry Cosby, chief of USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service, said in the release, "These new projects will harness the power of partnership to bring about solutions to natural resource concerns across the country while supporting our efforts to combat the climate crisis. Landowners will soon be able to apply for funds for a variety of on-the-ground conservation projects across the Trans-Pecos region of West Texas. Evaluating the effectiveness of funded projects is a key element of this partnership program. BRI will actively monitor the results of these projects, synthesize the results, and deliver associated recommendations to area producers and conservation partners to maximize impact. Applications will be available online later this year on the BRI website, bri.solros.edu. Walmart hosts Community Wellness Day for July 23rd. Event nationwide features free health screenings, affordable immunization, and wellness resources. Walmart announced via press release that it is inviting communities to get healthy ahead of a new school year at Walmart Wellness Day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. July 23rd. Customers can receive free glucose, cholesterol, BMI, and blood pressure screenings, as well as affordable immunizations like tetanus, hepatitis, HPV, COVID-19, and more at pharmacies nationwide. Walmart Wellness Day encourages families to get healthy and stay on a healthy track by helping them know their numbers and then seek care to improve their healthy lifestyles. Knowing your numbers is just a start, but additional helpful information allows you to make decisions and track your health improvements. Walmart Wellness Day is also a great time for customers to learn about our health and wellness offerings and solutions. More than 4,600 Walmart pharmacies across the country will host Walmart Wellness Day events from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. local time on July 23rd. Select stores will also feature vision screenings to make it even easier for customers to access the resources they need. Walmart Wellness Day events will feature the following health resources administered by qualified pharmacy and vision care teams. Free health screenings including glucose, cholesterol, blood pressure, body mass index, and vision screening select locations. Affordable immunizations including pneumonia, tetanus, HPV, measles, mumps, rubella, MMR, varicella, chickenpox, and shingles, whooping cough, Tdap, Hep A and B, and more. No cost to patients. And COVID-19 vaccines, wellness resources, and opportunity to talk with pharmacists. An exciting time of the year is approaching fast, and we look forward to offering these health and wellness resources for families as they gear up for school, Kevin Host, Walmart's Senior Vice President of Pharmacy, stated in the press release. Death notices for July 19th. Vicki Jean Mosley, 66, of Midland, died Friday, July 15th in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. July 19th at Sovereign Grace Church in Midland. Burial will follow the service at Serenity Memorial Gardens. A visitation was held 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Monday, July 18th at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Clarence Wayne Dickens, 86, of Odessa, died Friday, July 15th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. July 20th at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. David Burton is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Ricky Dean Rick Crawford, 64, of Kermit, died Friday, July 15th in Kermit. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. July 18th at Bellevue Baptist Church in Kermit.
Telegram, Scott Tuesday, Townsley July 19th, is officiating. Inside pages.
Arrangements are by family service.
Texas police launch internal review of Uvalde response by Jake Blyberg and Paul J. Weber, Associated Press, Uvalde. 2 months after the Uvalde school massacre, Texas State Police on Monday announced an internal review into the actions of dozens of troopers who were at Robb Elementary during 73 minutes of bewildering inaction by law enforcement as a gunman slaughtered 19 children and two teachers. The announcement appeared to widen the fallout of a damning 80-page report released over the weekend by the Texas House that revealed failures at all levels of law enforcement and identified 91 state troopers at the scene, more than all Uvalde officers combined. It also amounted to a public shift by the Texas Department of Public Safety, which until now has largely criticized local authorities for failing to confront the gunman sooner. The report made public Sunday laid bare for the first time just how massive a presence state police and U.S. Border Patrol had on the scene during one of the worst school shootings in U.S. history. You got 91 troopers on the scene. You got all the possible equipment you could want. And you're listening to the local school cop, said State Senator Roland Gutierrez, a Democrat whose district includes Uvalde, and who has accused DPS of seeking to minimize its role in the response. The findings that Border Patrol agents and state troopers made up more than half of the 376 law enforcement officials who rushed to the South Texas school on May 24th spread the responsibility for a slow and bungled response far wider than the previous accounts that emphasized mistakes by Uvalde officers. The report made clear that egregiously poor decision-making by authorities went beyond local law enforcement in Uvalde, who were eventually outnumbered more than 5-1 by state and federal officers at the scene. Other local police from the area around Uvalde also responded to the shooting. The report puts a new spotlight on the roles of state and federal agencies whose leaders, unlike local authorities, haven't had to sit through meetings where they were confronted by the furious parents of the dead children. Of the nearly 400 officers who converged on the school, only two are currently known to be on leave pending investigation into their actions. Pete Arredondo, the Uvalde Consolidated School District Police Chief, and Lieutenant Mariano Pargas, a Uvalde Police Department officer who was the city's acting police chief during the massacre. State police have previously said no troopers at the scene have been suspended. On Monday, Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott said the findings in the report are beyond disturbing, but did not single out any one agency. Texas DPS did not put a timeline on when the review would be complete. It said the actions of every trooper, state police agent, and Texas Ranger on the scene would be examined to determine if any violations of policy, law, or doctrine occurred. Colonel Steve McGraw, the director of Texas DPS, has previously laid much of the blame for the response at Arredondo, identifying him as the incident commander and criticizing him for treating the gunman in the classroom as a barricaded subject and not an active shooter. Massive Response, Little Action in Uvalde, by Jim Vertuno, Associated Press. A massive but uncoordinated and a chaotic law enforcement response. A regrettable culture of noncompliance on school security regarding the basics of locked doors. Online signals of coming violence from the shooter. The long-awaited Texas House report into the May 24th shooting at Robb Elementary in Uvalde that killed 19 fourth graders and two teachers spread the responsibility of the bungled response from law enforcement wider than previous accounts. It also questioned security protocols at the school and took a deeper dive into the shooter's background. Here are major findings of the House investigation. Massive, inept response. The report noted a massive but inept response from heavily armed local, state, and federal law enforcement. That began moments after the shooter crashed his truck on school grounds and entered the building, then continued through the excruciating inaction that dragged out more than an hour, even as parents begged officers to do something and dispatchers took 911 calls from inside the classrooms. At Robb Elementary, law enforcement responders failed to adhere to their active shooter training, and they failed to prioritize saving the lives of innocent victims over their own safety, the report said. Although much of the criticism has been leveled at the Uvalde School District Police, the report casts blame across all responding agencies, spreading responsibility much further than previously suggested. Nearly 400 law enforcement officials rushed to the school, most of them state and federal officers, only to spend a chaotic hour where no one seemed to take command. Pete Arredondo, the Uvalde School's police chief, who has received more scrutiny than any other officer on the scene that day, failed to establish himself as the incident commander and didn't transfer that responsibility to anyone else, the report said. And yet, no other officers stepped in to take over, despite an obvious atmosphere of chaos, the report found. While the group of initial responders on the scene acted appropriately by attempting to breach the classrooms and stop the attacker, they were driven back up by gunfire. They lost critical momentum by treating the scene as a barricaded shooter instead of an active shooter. Lockdown fatigue. The report noted the initial response may have lacked urgency because of the frequency of school lockdowns in recent months as law enforcement chased suspected human traffickers smuggling migrants into the country. In some instances, traffickers will crash vehicles and passengers flee in all directions. The school district had about 50 such alarms between February and May 2022. that frequency of less serious alerts in Uvalde diluted the significance of alerts and dampened everyone's readiness to act, the report concluded. The initial reaction of many administrators, teachers, and law enforcement responders was that it likely was a less dangerous situation, the report said. Even Arredondo and another responding officer said they considered that possibility when they didn't immediately see victims after they entered the school. Building security. Whether school doors were properly locked and could have delayed the shooter's unimpeded entry has been a key question since the day of the shooting. Robb Elementary had a recurring problem with maintaining locks and doors, and the school had a culture of non-compliance regarding locked doors, which turned out to be fatal, the report said. The door the shooter used to get into the building wasn't locked like it should have been, and the door to one of the classrooms he entered probably was not locked, the report said. The lock for that classroom was known by the teacher, the principal, another school employee, and many fourth grade students to be not working properly. No work order was ever placed to fix it. Shooter's hints of violence. The shooter had given some hints of coming violence in the months and days before the shooting. A year before the shooting, he was showing online interest in gore and violent sex, and at one point carried around a dead cat. While playing online games, he would become enraged when he lost and would threaten others, especially women. He also shared a developing fascination with school shootings and eventually earned the nickname School Shooter on one online platform. The report said a vague idea for a school shooting appears to have taken root in late 2021 and accelerated after the shooter had a falling out with his mother in early 2022. Several family members knew he was estranged from his mother and that he had asked for help buying guns, so-called straw purchases, that would have been illegal. They refused, but later learned that the week between his 18th birthday and the May 24th attack, he had legally purchased firearms and that his grandparents insisted they be removed from their home. In one May 14th online conversation, he simply wrote, 10 more days. Prior to the shooting, the attacker had no criminal history and had never been arrested. He is not known to have espoused any ideology or political views of any kind. Private individuals alone knew the many warning signals, the report said. Border Patrol. While much of the investigation initially focused on local and state law enforcement agencies, the report noted the U.S. Border Patrol had 149 officers who responded to the scene, by far the most of any agency. And while the Border Patrol's tactical unit led the final breach of the classroom to take down the gunman, the report noted that Border Patrol officers were among those who waited to take action. The commander of the Border Patrol tactical team waited for a bulletproof shield and working master key for a door to the classrooms that may not have even been needed before entering and killing the attacker, the report said. The committee was told none of the Border Patrol agents involved in opening the door to the classroom were wearing activated body cameras. The investigating committee spoke to the tactical team's acting commander, Paul Guerrero, but the Border Patrol was not among the agencies to give any public testimony in Texas House and Senate hearings last month.
Melatonin and estrogen. Dear Dr. Roach, I have been taking 5 milligrams of instant dissolving melatonin as a sleep aid, having been assured it was totally safe and not habit-forming. Recently, I read something that scared me. Apparently, melatonin stimulates production of estrogen. I am a breast cancer survivor, and I am not permitted to have estrogen of any kind. I stopped it immediately. Is this true? If so, why isn't it mentioned on the bottle? DJH. Answer. In a single case study from 2008, one woman had higher levels of estradiol, the main form of estrogen in the body, when she took melatonin. Other studies have not confirmed this, including a 2012 study of 86 volunteers. Studies done on breast cancer cells show that melatonin inhibits growth and melatonin may reduce spread of breast cancer. Night shift workers have an increased risk of breast cancer, possibly from shifted sleep cycles. Women who sleep only 6 hours or less are at a higher risk. Melatonin does not work for everyone with sleep troubles, but you need not worry about its effect on breast cancer. Most of the data shows that melatonin, if anything, is more likely to have a protective than harmful role in breast cancer.
This is the Dear Abby column. Woman can't stop thinking about her husband's friend. Dear Abby, I have a huge crush on my husband's friend, Shane. I think about him daily and fantasize about him every night. He used to come into the place where I work once a month. I wanted to tell him back then how I felt, but I chickened out. I recently changed jobs, and he came into where I work now. I made a point of talking to him, but said nothing about how I feel. I'm sure he could tell by the way I was smiling. I went to the races when Shane was racing and wanted to tell him then. My husband was there and went over to talk to him, so I stayed sitting on the bleachers. When my husband returned, he said Shane asked him where I was. Abby, I have felt this way for 2 years. My husband and I have been married for 7. When I'm driving home from work, I fantasize about Shane riding in the car with me. I hurry to get to town, hoping I'll see him at the gas station or passing by. I'm considering contacting him on Messenger. I have never thought about my husband this way. Please give me some advice on what to do. Signed, Over the Moon in Missouri. Dear Over, nowhere in your letter did you mention whether your feelings for Shane are reciprocated. If you contact him, what exactly do you plan on telling him? That you love him? That you lust for him? Your efforts would be better spent trying to figure out what happened to the excitement in your marriage rather than starting a romance with your husband's friend. If you do what you have in mind and Shane doesn't feel the same way, it will be enormously embarrassing. If he does have similar feelings, your husband will be devastated. The next time you have a fantasy about Shane, I urge you to switch to another channel. Dear Abby, my grandson is 24. He was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome after he graduated from high school. He was first diagnosed with ADHD when he was young, then years later as bipolar. Since high school, he spends his time in his bedroom playing video games. He has no social interactions and doesn't engage much, if at all, with his 2 younger brothers. He also doesn't get along well with his stepfather. My daughter, his mother, is desperate for help but has been unable to find it. Most programs are designed for children or are too far away. Even trying to find a counselor locally who specializes in Asperger's has led to blind alleys. Where do we go to find help for him? He's very functional but somewhat naive socially, and my daughter is fearful of him falling in with the wrong crowd. He has become depressed, and after years of turning his nose up at getting help, he actually wants it now. What do we do? Signed, Seeking Help in Texas. Dear Seeking, forcing help on a person who isn't ready usually accomplishes little. That your grandson is finally willing to accept that he needs help is hopeful. Suggest that your daughter reach out to an organization called AANE, the Asperger Autism Network, and ask for guidance for her son. To have questions and concerns addressed and to receive information and resources, she should visit aane.org. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.